Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. My guest on this episode is the marvellous Peter Laws, who returns after a long hiatus to the show to discuss a variety of topics. We dive into his wonderful YouTube channel, Into the Fog, the re-release of his classic book, The Frighteners, and many other things in between, including some of the cases he's featured, personal experiences, and why we should all try and be balanced and sceptical when dealing with outstanding and unusual claims. But before that, of course, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. And you can click the link in the show notes as well. Thank you to my latest patrons, CLK and Dave. Welcome to the team, and thank you to each and every one of you who continue to support the show. Mysteries and Monsters is across most social media platforms. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for news, episodes and updates. Our exclusive merchandise site is available via TeePublic, and you can click the link in the show notes too. And our intro and outro music are performed by the incredible Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his wonderful artwork. And the show is produced by Mr. Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. Now let's Peter take us by the hand and lead us into the fog. My guest on this episode is an author, journalist, film critic and public speaker who, along with being the host and creator of the unnerving Into the Fog YouTube show, shows us how much talent you can fit into one day. As its critically acclaimed The Frighteners sees an updated version release, it seems the dark and macabre are a welcoming embrace for the marvellous Peter Laws. Peter, welcome back and hello.
Hello, what an introduction. How much talent you can fit in one day. I'm going to get that printed out on an A4 sheet and put it directly on my door. So all my family can look at that every single moment of the day.
Yes. Well, the next time you order yourself a giant flyer run, you can use that instead, I think, Peter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I have to be careful with ordering flyers because I ordered some recently for my Into the Fog YouTube show. Yeah, and accidentally did not get postcard size, but got whatever that was, double postcard size. It's ridiculously big.
Making a statement, Peter.
Yeah, yeah, but not an intentional one.
I mean, what a year it's been for you. As I say, it's 5 years since you've been on the show. What a difference that seems to have made for both of us. Mm. Your YouTube channel, Into the Fog, has just exploded across the internet this year, which I'm not surprised with the quality of work
that you've always done. But I think, are you a little surprised at how much it exploded? Because obviously we're friends on social media, Peter. I always follow your work, whatever you've done since I've got to know you 5 or 6 years ago. I was just blown away when it just seemed to skyrocket.
I was surprised. I mean, but when I say surprised, I was always like hoping that would happen. So kind of I was working hard to try and create something that would become sustainable. So because that was always the goal, for it to become a kind of sustainable, well, job, really, to be doing spooky things and not have to do a normal job, but be able to concentrate on that. That was always kind of my aim. So in some ways, that part wasn't a surprise because I wanted and hoped for that. But in real life terms, when it actually happened, then yes, it's a brilliant, wonderful surprise. And yeah, I'm really, really pleased about it.
Is it a conscious decision to choose the cases that you do, Peter? Because the one thing that's always impressed me about that particular strand of your work is that you seem to focus on the kinds of cases that are either overlooked, misinformed, or has developed into some kind of modern urban myth that you get. And I've noticed, as a lover of the weird and the strange and the forgotten cases in this particular field, you seem to have a real knack for uncovering some gems that, for people like us, they're probably quite well known. But in the general lovers of the paranormal, they seem to have been completely left behind.
Yes, I'm glad you spotted that, because I do make a conscious effort, and it does take effort to try and find the cases that maybe aren't so well known. And for me, I do that on one hand in a kind of cynical way of saying, well, how do I kind of stand out amongst the crowd? Because there's so many different paranormal channels. But also, I do have a kind of tendency, I've always been like this, to be drawn to the things that people forget or dismiss, and that's even down to just people or things. So, like, for example, when I'm growing up and people are saying, "Oh, horror films are a low culture, they're trash," I'm quick to defend them and bring the most obscure examples out and say, "No, they're great." Or when people say, you know, like brutalist architecture, I'm a fan of, and a lot of people think it's ugly and not important. Whereas I quite like the look of a concrete municipal car park. It has a beauty of its own, and in the sense that it's neglected. There's something about the neglected things that attracts me. And so when it comes to talking about paranormal cases, yes, I mean, I want to bring things that are fresh to people. That's important. But also I do like to uncover things that maybe not as many people have spoken about. And it's an amazing feeling if you come across something and then you start looking around and saying, wow, why isn't anyone talking about this? I think one episode in particular that stands out to me that gave me that feeling was when I looked into the haunting of Elke Summer, the actress.
Yes.
And I did a really almost like a feature length episode on that. And I remember when I discovered that, I started to have a slight bit of panic, because I thought, oh gosh, like no one seems to have covered this, at least not the big ones. And if someone's bound to cover this, because it's such an amazing story, and my episode doesn't come out for like 2 weeks, so I like just hammered in, did this episode in 2 weeks, and I'm constantly just checking, thinking someone's gonna come up with this. Yes. And it's gonna so blatantly look like I've ripped them off. But they didn't in that 2 week period, and of course they hadn't in years and years, and I was shocked that story wasn't better known. And so there's a satisfaction in finding the older forgotten things and bringing them to people and having that feeling of seeing other people go, wow, why aren't we talking about this? This is amazing. And I thought that episode in particular was a great example.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the stranger celebrity stories I've ever come across. I mean, another one you've covered, and I'm of the same opinion as to why it's not more well known, is Joan Collins's experience when they went to Italy.
Yes.
I think I saw her interviewed about on a program from about 30 years ago, Peter, talking about that particular case.
Yes.
And I just thought, what the hell happened here then? Because that is just a whole level of weirdness. You've got multiple witnesses in a foreign country having a lavish weekend away with very well-connected friends, and they all get scared out of their wits. And I thought, why does nobody talk about this? Because it's a brilliant story.
Yes, it is. And also, these people who witnessed these things, I'll talk about them later, like they're in interviews. And when I put out this episode, people in the comments would say things like, well, look, I worked with some of these people in my time. I did a photo shoot with this person, or I worked with this publicist. And I remember the night they sat down and they told me about this story, and they were deadly serious. They hadn't made it up. And so my goal with Into the Fog is to try and present these cases with giving the witnesses the benefit of the doubt, but never insisting that it absolutely happened. I want the viewers to have their own choice in that, of course. But my tendency is to say, well, look, I mean, you've got to show openness to what the people are saying, as crazy as it sounds. And I think that is important, because I've kind of shared, I haven't had a lot of paranormal experiences myself, but I have had, I would say, two significant experiences, one of them fairly recently. And it's been fascinating when I've suddenly been exposed to the responses to paranormal claims. So when I've shared things that have happened to me, I've made two videos on those two incidents, and how people respond, just saying like, well, it's obvious he's lying. And of course, this time I know I'm not lying, because I am the witness.
Mm.
And so, and the more you see people just dismiss these things outright, the more empathy rises for others who come forward and say things that do sound sometimes ridiculous. And you go, well, hang on a minute, something happened to me, and maybe that happened to them. But yeah, I don't insist on people believe it. I want people to have the choice. But yeah, I'm erring. The more and more of these witnesses you talk to and the stories you hear, I err on the side of, I think there is something happening in this world we can't explain.
I think it's one of those things that, yeah, as you say, I grew up in a haunted house. You've had some paranormal experiences.
Yeah.
I don't need convincing. I do have a line of credulity sometimes where I hear certain stories, yeah, and I start to scratch my head a little. But I think it's frustrating, Peter, that often certain cases will get brought up that seem to be used as a stick to beat everybody else who has a paranormal experience they're trying to share.
Mm.
But just because one story's fake doesn't mean everything is. It just means, well, that precisely, you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there can be, I have nothing against skepticism. I think, you know, it just depends on what your brain is like. And some people simply cannot believe this stuff and will naturally try and think of ways of dismissing it because it fits with their worldview. And the opposite is true of believers, you know, that they will come into it thinking, I want this to be true, so how do I make it true? And so, of course, people come from different angles. But what I find is sometimes the skeptical approach can explain like one aspect of a situation, you know, like, ah, well, you saw that at nighttime while you were in bed, you were probably dreaming. And I'm very sympathetic to that. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And then it happens again the next night. Oh, you saw like a hooded axeman or something at the end of your bed at 2 a.m. You know, you could well be dreaming. And so they explain that. But then the next day, like the whole family are in the kitchen having dinner and you see the hooded axeman, you know, walking through the wall or something. And then it's like, ah, well, that at that time, it was probably mold in the walls or something. And I'm like, yes. Oh, well, okay. And then the next day, like they go to school and then other witnesses see it where there isn't mold, but, or maybe there is mold, but you know, it becomes, it's the accumulative effect of all of these things that build and build and build, where for me, it just becomes not unreasonable and not out of the question to say, actually, all these coincidences could have created what looked like a haunting. But it becomes equally likely to me that it could actually be what they said it was, an actual haunting. So being open to these things, and I suppose I'm imaginative, is not necessarily being wishful thinking. It's just saying, well, hang on, what happens if it really is what they say it is? And I'm quite happy to live in that middle ground, though I, like I say, I tend to err towards that I think it's true.
Mm. Very much so. I think, like you say, you've always got to position yourself in the middle, really. If you want to discuss these with an open mind, I think both sides, you fall down into belief, whether it's dismissal or embracing the phenomena regardless. Mm. And I think too often, as you say, for me, they're two sides of the same coin often, because you have such dogmatic approaches to it from opposite ends of the spectrum that I think both don't realise that perhaps they're incorrect because of their where they've placed them in regards to their belief in this phenomena. And therefore, as far as they're concerned, everything is either proof or dismissal.
Yes, exactly. And I think there's a misunderstanding that people think the older you get, the more you need to start to decide which side you're on. This happens particularly in religion. In religion, there's this particularly kind of fundamentalist religion or evangelical Christianity where they have a really fundamental focus. Mm. There's this idea that, well, if you start having doubts or you're gray on certain beliefs, the older you get, you're backsliding. That's the word they use. And you really should become more and more concrete the older you get. But actually, I think in real life, that's not how it works. I think really you're more concrete when you're younger. You have a very kind of black and white view. And anyone, you know, with who was a teenager or who has teenage children, you know, will understand what it's like to have a teenager walk in and say, well, I think we should like tax everybody, or I think we should stop tax, or I think we should, you know, everyone should be living with each other, or basically all these like blanket statements. I think there should be like free healthcare for absolutely everyone. It's like, well, yes, I agree with that. But everything, and you say, oh, well, do you mean like plastic surgery as well? You know, like they haven't thought of the nuances involved in these things. By the way, I'm not saying I don't believe in free healthcare. That was just something that came to my mind. Slay went on tangent there. I'm trying to demonstrate like how people, when they're younger, they can just have a very black and white way of thinking. But yes. Then as they grow older, they start to be exposed to more and more data. And they go, oh, okay, it's not quite as quite as easy as I thought. It's actually quite complicated. Doesn't mean there isn't a solution out there, but you become a little bit more humble about your ideas. And prejudices certainly can exist when you're younger, sadly. And you can, in religion, people be like, oh, you know, people who follow a different religion to me, they're all this, or they're bad, or whatever. And then you end up meeting someone from a different religion or go to university and you're like, oh, actually, you know, these guys are all right.
Yeah.
And the more and more information you get, the more in some ways gray and mysterious the world becomes. And for some people, that's very disconcerting because they want it to be black and white. But I guess my point is, I think real maturity is realizing how ultimately immature we are and having the humility to say, actually, I'm not sure. And I'm open-minded to this.
Mm.
But some people feel comfortable in that zone, as I do. But I'm aware that for some people, it's not a comfortable place to be. It's actually quite a scary place to be when you're not sure what's what anymore.
But I think I stand in the same ground, Peter, I have to be honest. But it's one of those things, like you say there. I mean, one of my favourite quotes is, I'm not young enough to know everything, which everybody always says Oscar Wilde said, but it's J.M. Barrie. And I've always thought that quote is a perfect encapsulation of the arrogance of youth. Because you do, we all did. We all thought we had the answers to everything. And I'm not really sure why it's something that's prescribed to older people when it seems to be, from personal experience and my friends and growing up, we all knew cast iron what we believed in when we were 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
30 years on, a lot of us would look back and go, actually, no.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we have to give each other the grace to change opinion, you know, and to be willing to say, oh, well, I used to think that and I don't think that now. And also, who knows what might happen, what might happen in my life tomorrow that might change my opinion again. But interesting, like in today's culture, there's this feeling of, oh, no, you need to be like locked down. And you can't like flip-flop and change your mind because that's a sign of a weak mind. But actually, I would say that's a sign of a mind that is willing to respond to the data you've been given on that particular day.
Absolutely. For me, it's the exact opposite. I think it shows growth, it shows mindfulness, and it shows maturity, if nothing else, Peter. That's what people should be.
Yeah, I hope so. And of course, when it comes to the paranormal, the real kind of grenade that gets thrown into people's lives is when something happens to them that is inexplicable. And this is what happens with so many of the witnesses that I've spoken to, but also, you know, reading about these subjects for years and years, and also with myself as well, that, you know, you can't be just living your life not particularly seeking paranormal experiences, and then they just suddenly start. And it's even something you don't want to happen. A lot of people who are interested in this subject actually want these things to happen to them because it's exciting or it meets some sort of need. I understand that. But I've been really interested to find the people who had no interest in it and were either hardcore cynics or just completely not bothered about this subject. And the reason why they're interested in it today is just purely because for 6 months in their house, crazy stuff happened and no one understood and no one appreciated how traumatic or weird it was. And so now, of course, they've got an interest in the subject because they want to try and understand the inexplicable thing that happened to them.
Absolutely. And I've often been surprised when that's put forward as an explanation as to why it can't be real. When you think that, well, every culture on this planet has an interest in the afterlife or the paranormal to some degree, wherever you are. The focuses shift depending on your cultural location, I suspect, Peter. Mm-hmm. But it's something that connects us all, even if you're not wanting to use the afterlife as some kind of confirmation of your religious following. Even it's, for me, it's the biggest question that everybody on the planet wants to know is what happens next. Doesn't matter what book you read or whether you're an atheist or whatever. Something happens and nobody's really sure what goes on. And I think that, for me, has always been part of the power of the paranormal over people, because it's that, I think, that scares some people. Because some people think, what causes people to become ghosts, or what is a ghost? Mm-hmm. Is this some kind of punishment? Is it penance? Is it quantum mechanics not working properly and you're stuck around for a bit till your space comes back round again? Or do you have an appointment? And if you miss it, Peter, you've got to be stuck here for another 100 years.
And it is a real wild west of ideas. Because it's a wild west and it could be all of these things, it's very appealing to the modern mindset, because we don't like to be locked down to one particular description. So, for example, it's one of the reasons why religion has declined and paranormal interest has grown, because religion does not present necessarily a cornucopia of options. I mean, there is a lot of variation within Christian spirituality, for example. Mm. And when you say you're a Christian, it doesn't mean you're the same Christian as maybe people have seen on TV. You know, there's a lot of variation, but ultimately there's still there is a God. And that God interacts with the universe that God created. Whereas, you know, the paranormal does not like lock you down to that. It can say, oh, well, hey, maybe it's spirits of the dead. Maybe it's, interdimensional. Maybe it's time slips. It's so, so wide that it's really appealing, because then we feel free to make our own choices then. And that's very important to people in 2025. We want to choose what breakfast cereal we have, and we want to be autonomous in what we pick. In terms of politics, we don't want our parents to tell us who to vote for. And, you know, that's so important to us. And so we don't want to be told what form of the paranormal we have to accept. But at the same time, it means it creates this, in some ways, an incredibly messy and slippery world that it's fascinating to see how people will elevate certain ideas over others. And I've always thought this, when I started going to paranormal conferences, and I used to love doing that and speaking at them, I still do it. And I really enjoy hanging out with people and chatting about these things. But it's fascinating how, if the idea of, let's say, for example, is there a character that created the universe, some sort of divine personality, and you go through the potential evidences for that, and maybe there isn't, of course, but a lot of people have thought that over the years.
Yeah.
And that can get sometimes just laughed at in paranormal circles. It's like, wow, you know, you believe that could be a possibility. That's ridiculous. But then straight after that, they'll talk about, say, fairies, for example, and or gnomes being seen, and they'll say, well, actually there's a surprising amount of evidence to say that gnomes I do fly around in cars, and it could be true or whatever. And I'm not saying fairies absolutely don't exist, but I'm talking about we choose the things we believe are credible, and it's not always about the actual topic. It's about our own desires and tolerances. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of, it's an open market for ideas. And I do think God is part of that. Mm. But yeah, in the paranormal world, sometimes that's one of the least considered topics, which I think is ironic. And also within the church world, it's one of the least considered topics, in the sense of you can go in church and you talk about the supernatural, you know, hello, vicar, things are flying around my house or whatever. And they're like, oh, some of them don't want to know. Or just if you say, look, I'm really interested in ghosts. And you say that to someone in a church and they're like, you shouldn't be interested in that. That's demonic or whatever. So, yeah, it's a messy world. But we're messy people. We're messy human beings. As long as we're like kind to each other, that's hopefully we'll be all right.
I think it is. And like you say, you see these trends and buzz terms come and go.
Yeah.
Probably the best example in the paranormal is the stone tape theory. Which,
yeah,
from my experience, seems to be entirely based on Nigel Neal's play from
pretty
about
much
50 years ago. And then everybody went, oh, I think he's onto something. And I thought, sometimes you think, well, why are you latching onto that and not the fact that there might be a Martian spaceship buried under London that gets discovered when they're making a new tube station or something? Why is that more appealing than Martians in the ground for some reason? Mm. And so It comes around a lot. I mean, you see it a lot at the minute. Cryptozoology, certain people are just embracing quantum mechanics when the best physicists on the planet don't understand it. And it's being put forward as explanations for people. And you just think, these are just buzz terms. Mm. I did not expect 40 years after leaving school, Peter, to suddenly start to have to understand physics again when it's no part of my daily life, just to learn about more cases of Bigfoot. These are things I did not need in my more mature life, Peter. Mm. And so I'm very annoyed about these certain buzz terms that come around. But it's another one. You see certain terms that get overused. Like if anybody talks about anything strange or supernatural from the Middle East or Asia, it's always a djinn, but it's not. It's just cultural ignorance. Doppelgangers. People talk about voyagers and people say, oh, that's a doppelganger. Mm-hmm. No, they're not the same thing. And so these terms seem to override certain things and just seem to become the pervasive catch-all term for things. And it's a bit silly because, as you said earlier, there's lots of shapes and sizes in this field and not everything's going to fit.
No, that's true. And I do think we are like limited by our vocabulary in certain ways. So I do understand why, you know, if you're from a certain part of the world, you're going to use certain words to describe things. And I'm okay with that, because for me, like, it could well describe the same thing. You know, if someone's talking about a djinn or a ghost or a demon or whatever, you know, I guess in my mind, I tend to just like Google translate that in my head, and I think, oh, maybe this is, they're just describing whatever the mystery is, and I happen to use the words, say, ghost or demon or whatever. But that's just my window into it. But we're both looking essentially into the same thing. But yeah, the creation of this like cornucopia of ideas is quite exciting, and it's cool, and it's really interesting to see it happen. But at the same time, it can be quite bewildering, and it's no surprise that you find tribalism developing within the paranormal space, or in ufology, for example, where because there's all of these different ideas, little groups will say, well, no, my idea is correct. And so we are the people who believe Bob Lazar, or we're the people who don't believe him, or, you know, or whatever. And then they create these little enclaves, and particularly with social media, like curate their communities so that you only have people from those groups within your field of like influence, and so you end up just being confirmed over and over again what you naturally believed in before, and then you just end up like in a corner in some ways, because you're refusing to see things from another point of view. So I'm a big believer in human connection, and people particularly spending time social time in some ways with people who you may not necessarily agree with, because I mean, it can be hard going, especially if the conversation gets onto tricky things, but sometimes you can be more open-minded towards a human being and what they believe if you've actually kind of sat and had a pint with them. And it doesn't mean you have to believe what they say, but it just means you don't dismiss them as a one-dimensional character or a baddie. But that tends to happen in all spheres of life, politics, but also it does happen in the paranormal world. And I hope that could be remedied somehow.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I think the one thing that social media has seen the end of is nuance, Peter. Because there doesn't seem to be any sort of correlation between a statement and a response often, primarily because you have people commenting on things that either doesn't apply to where they are in the world, or they just don't understand the references often. And that is the same kind of thing, as you say, in this particular field. There's tribalism in all aspects of it. There's gatekeeping in all aspects of it. Yeah. And often, one of the things I always find quite frustrating is when certain people who believe in one particular thing decide to try and take somebody's experience and say, no, you're wrong, it's actually this.
Yeah.
Which I am amazed how much cross-pollination of things. I've seen it in every field that I'm interested in, the Fortean, Peter, be it ufology. I've seen people claim that UFO encounters are fairy encounters. I've seen people claim that fairy encounters are alien encounters. Bigfoot's dogman, dogman's Bigfoot. Bigfoot's an alien. No, he's not. I mean, what? And that's before you even get starting to explain, well, is it a ghost? Is it a demon? Is it your grandma that passed away 20 years ago, coming back just to make sure you're in bed? Could be. Who knows? Yeah. I've heard stranger stories.
She's so tall, my granny.
She was a big lady.
Yeah, she used to make really weird noises in nighttime and bang sticks on trees, but, you know.
Couldn't take her in wood, she'd just run.
Yeah, just her way.
Yeah. Like Father Jack, after he'd had a drink, she was away.
That's right, yeah. But it is this idea of kind of like, people think like have like an ownership over a theory, and therefore that theory overshadows everyone else. And I'm a fan of a Scottish comedian called Limmy.
Yes.
And I really like Limmy stuff. And Limmy did a sketch once where like there's two people in a pub, and one of them says like, you know, like, oh, I saw that film that you recommended to me. And he's like, oh yeah, did you like it? And he says, well, nah, to be honest, I thought it was a bit crap. And the sketch is about like how offended this person is. And like, what? You're basically saying I'm crap because of the film you said. So the next scene is this guy comes back and says, they do it the other way around, where the one who was offended, the one who said that that he didn't like this film, says, oh, well, I want you to watch one of my films that I like. Why don't you watch Jaws, Steven Spielberg's Jaws? And so like Limmy goes away, watches that, comes back, and he says, well, to get him back, he says, well, I think Jaws was crap. Like, it's just a rubbish film. And which, of course, nobody says Jaws is crap. And it's the offense at saying, like, his point is, like, if you watch something that I've recommended to you and I say to you, you know, oh, it's an amazing film, you've got to see this, and then you watch it and you come back and you say, to be honest, I thought it was really rubbish. In a sense, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's just your opinion, and your opinion is just that, and my opinion is just that. And it's totally possible for us to just say, oh, crikey, you didn't like Dawn of the Dead by George Romero. Wow, okay, well, fair enough. Maybe it's not as amazingly universal as I thought it was, but I absolutely love that film. But instead, what we do instead is we take offense and we say, it's not crap. Like, you're wrong. But you can't demand people's reactions to things. Like, they are themselves. And I think it does happen with theories around the paranormal or whatever, the Fortean world, that we have this kind of, we're so precious about our beliefs that if somebody else questions them, it affects us. You know, it, like, don't tell us that, you know, Bigfoot is an alien or whatever. Like, that's not true. But you know, for me, I guess I exist in this middle ground where I think, well, I don't think it's true, but I'm quite happy to be open-minded to maybe it's true. And this sort of radical open-mindedness does not mean that you believe everything, but it just means you leave a tiny space for what sounds ridiculous. I mean, I remember thinking having a conversation with someone once, and I said, well, to be honest, like, I'm 99% sure that my wife loves me. But if I'm intellectually honest, I cannot guarantee that. She is not an actress that has been paid to do this in some weird way. Like, I'm so kind of open-minded that I'm like, I can't 100% say that my wife legitimately loves me, because, you know, she may be some sort of actress. I might be part of some weird Truman Show thing, theoretically.
Yeah.
But in practice, I do believe she loves me. And so I live like she loves me, and I'm very happy to stake my life on that. But I don't feel comfortable to say 100%. And I always leave this little wiggle room for the crazy possibilities. But not everybody can do that, or wants to do that, or think that's why. Some people think that's a silly way of thinking. But it doesn't mean that you don't have any beliefs. Because there's some fundamental beliefs that I think are unshakable. Like, I think, this is going to sound very Oprah Winfrey of me, but I think, like, love is the hope of the universe. Yeah. I can't believe that it's not. Like, I just believe that caring for one another and caring for those even who we might disagree with is the answer. And if we don't have that, we're screwed. So I think there are some fundamental things that are inside us that are unshakable. But the rest, you know, whether Bigfoot's an alien or not, have our theories and stake our claims, but maybe he's a fairy.
You know, don't set him off, Peter.
Big hairy fairy.
Stranger things have happened. I suppose one of the most satisfying things must be the power of your book, The Frighteners, Peter. As I said in the introduction, it's just been re-released and updated. Mm. Nice new cover.
It's really, sorry to interrupt you there, but just in case anyone rushes out to buy it thinking that it's an updated version, it is just a recover. So they wanted to reprint it with a new swanky cover, but the inside is just as the same as before, just as brilliant as it was when it came out.
Does the power of it still surprise you? Because it's been a while since it's been out, and it's not often that a book gets a revamp so far down the line, Peter. And as I was saying to you before we started, a friend of mine, he's not a regular reader, but he's a reader, he's a lover of horror. He's a complete skeptic when it comes to anything to do with the paranormal, cryptozoology, right? Ufology, none of it. It's all wishy-washy nonsense, which is quite funny, because we like winding him up, talking about ghosts near him, and he gets very grumpy.
Yeah.
He loves your book. He thinks it's amazing.
Wow.
Are you still humbled that people are still discovering it and loving it even now, Peter?
Yeah, I am. And really quite touched by it, because there was a, in many ways, that book had a kind of pastoral mission as well as a just interesting mission. And just in case that any of your listeners aren't sure what the book's about, it's called The Frighteners, Why We Love Monsters, Ghosts, Death, and Gore. And it was my journey. I kind of go on like crazy adventures in Transylvania and Rome and in Britain, just like experiencing scary, morbid things, and then explaining why actually it's not unhealthy to be interested in morbid things, to like horror films or true crime or ghosts or being a goth or, you know, death metal. And the reason I wrote that book was, firstly, I've always liked that type of thing. But at the time that I was thinking about writing that book, I was worked as a church minister. Mm-hmm. And as a church minister, you are often thought of as, well, you should just think about nice things, you know, like why would you want to, you know, literally take an axe and chop off a zombie's head in a video game? Like, that doesn't sound very Jesus like. And so like, why would you want to do that? And I understand the kind of the disconnect, the sort of psychological dissonance in that. And so I wanted to answer that for myself, but also for other people, and through the journey of the book. And it's quite a fun book. You know, it's a kind of good laugh. I tried to make it fairly light, even though it's talking about dark subjects, but it tries to unpack the reasons why, as human beings, we've always been drawn to the morbid. And it's not because we are horrible people. It's because we are in some ways frightened people. I mean, I think there's a line at the end of the book where it says we are the frighteners. And it's this idea of actually we are scared of the world and scared of things that happen, death and loss, violence. And so we cleverly take culture and art and we start to recreate those things in ways that we can handle and manage. And I think it's actually a very ingenious and clever way of us dealing with the things that we're scared of. And so it's a healthy thing to enjoy horror films. And, you know, as long as you're not going out and actually chopping off real people's heads, I draw the line at that. As long as you're not doing that, you know, there's something really important about it. And so putting that message out into the world was in some ways my way of saying, well, look, I'm not a freak, even though sometimes I've been made to feel like one. I'm not. And sometimes maybe I've thought I could be one, but I'm not. It's quite normal. And the very satisfying thing is having countless messages from people from all across the world of saying how much it's meant to them to have that revelation that actually the things they're interested in does not make them out to be a bad person. Because it can be quite a lonely road to walk when you are drawn to the macabre, and particularly if you're in a religious context. But, you know, like some of your viewers out there will be, listeners will know what it's like to have people going like, why'd you like this stuff? Like, why can't you just like normal things? Can you just get into football? Like, why does it always have to be flipping? A few months ago, we were at a party, dinner party, and I went to the toilet and I came back and my wife stopped me in the corridor and she was like, Peter, can you stop talking about poltergeists? like, can you not see people are getting scared? And I'm like, oh, I just thought it was a cool topic. And yes, I did see people getting scared, but I thought that was also cool. And so not everyone thinks this way, but it can make you think that you're in a minority, like you're like this little like dark freak, this little monster kid in the corner. Mm. But that book was an attempt to say, no, statistically speaking, you're really normal, and we have done this for centuries. And If the people who turn their face away from the news or don't watch films that have any conflict in them or never watch crime drama or that's they're actually in the minority. There's not that many people who purely watch Hallmark Christmas movies, even though I love them too. I like watching like, you know, fluffy romantic comedies, but I also quite like seeing very dark things. I like watching films that have sad endings and bad endings. Sometimes I feel ripped off if a film ends and it's a happy ending. Sometimes I really enjoy it when it just ends in a super bleak way. And some people can find that really weird. But there was an interesting study done of people who suffered from depression, and they were given a set of novels that had happy endings, and they were asked to read those for a few months and rate how they felt at the end of them. And then they were given books that had super bleak almost like apocalyptic endings where, you know, nobody lived. Like really sad endings. And then we're given those books. How do you feel after reading those? And their personal well-being was higher after reading the books that had the sad, horrible endings. So there's something therapeutic in these things. And it sounds complicated, but yes, that book tries to explain all of that. And having people come back to say, not only they've understood themselves, but also sometimes it's partners or, you know, relatives of people who like this stuff. And they said, I've actually thought my husband was, or my wife was actually a bit like dangerously weird because she loves watching all these serial killer documentaries. And I'm scared that she might be a nutcase. You know, why, who likes this? Who actually should like this stuff? And then they read the book and they come back and they say, oh, maybe she's not a nutcase. It's okay. That's satisfying.
Yes. I've often thought about that, Peter, because often as someone that also really likes true crime, and the weirder the better, I think, I've often wondered how they're going to deal with this in the future, police, because there's so many people out there who are really into true crime. And often you'll see, murderer, well, we caught him due to his internet history and what he was looking up.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think, Christ, I hope I'm not wrongly accused of something because my internet history will be horrendous. And you just think, often it's the people that aren't interested in that. There are certain cases, obviously, modern era, I'm sure there'll be some people who are really interested in it who transcend into reality in regards to their interests. But the vast majority of people do not make anywhere near those kind of steps. It's often people who have no interest in the subject that get caught by that because they've been quickest way to dissolve a body in acid, or how deep do you need to make a grave, or quickest way to kill somebody. But everything else is like Black Friday shopping or Primark or reading the BBC. And you're like, hang on.
Yes.
This seems like an outlier here.
Yeah. I did remember, because even though it's a nonfiction book that came out, the only reason, by the way, I wrote that nonfiction book was because at the time I had a fiction book and I got a literary agent with this fiction book, and that's what I was aiming to do, write novels. But my agent was having trouble placing this book, and I thought, oh, crud, I guess I'm never going to get to write novels. And so I said, well, as a backup, I'll come up with this idea for a nonfiction book. Do you want to send that out? And so she did. And this was me thinking like my novel writing career was never going to start. And then a few months later, I got a call from her saying, amazing news, you know, you've got a two book fiction deal. And I was like, oh, amazing. So I started writing, you know, start a series of novels that I've had four novels out so far with the same character, and which was amazing. But then, a couple of, like, not that long after, she called and said, oh, by the way, that backup idea for the nonfiction book, that's come through too. So you're going to need to write that in the year when you're writing the second novel. But anyway, but the point I'm sharing about the novels is when I was writing those novels, I remember emailing my agent and the publisher. And I was saying, is there some sort of thing I can do to declare to the police that I am researching some things that are really messed up, and how can I let them know that it's part of? So, you know, it was things like, what's the quickest way to you know, chop up a body, or, you know, how long will it take for someone to die, or, you know, what's the best way to drown someone, or like, it's in all of these. And I'm like, this I was feeling like really weird about it and looking these things up. And yeah, I remember saying to them, like, now I'm in this author world, can you now give me access to the police connection so I can declare this at the start and they'll know I'm not doing anything bad? But they, you know, unsurprisingly, they said, oh, there is no such connection. You're just going to have to hope for the best and don't actually kill anyone.
I suppose, obviously, like you say, a series of books, four now, which is obviously we've got the same protagonist in them, who is...
Yeah.
There's a strand of the supernatural.
Yes.
Do you use or latch onto a particular real life case, Peter, when you're thinking of new adventures for Matt on his journeys? Because I think it's one of those things that occasionally when we've got detective fiction I think it's strange somehow how the one with the supernatural element often gets elevated. Sherlock Holmes is a prime example of this, that you've got such a litany of cases there. Some incredible, some a little bit strange and a bit peculiar, like the League of Red-Headed Men story, which is a very odd one.
Yeah.
Strange, but it is what it is. But everybody thinks Hound of the Baskervilles. As soon as you say Sherlock Holmes, it's the terrifying legend of the ghostly dog. Agatha Christie did it a couple of times with some of her characters.
Mm.
And they're still remembered nearly 100 years on from those particular novels, 150 for Baskervilles almost. Were these kind of inspirations, elements that you wanted to bring in, or did you want to go into it with a fresh palette, but using your love of the supernatural as an intrinsic part?
Certainly, like, influenced by, you know, previous stories and things that I've enjoyed before. But in terms of the actual kind of plot lines and ideas for these books, I mean, the character is an ex-church minister turned atheist professor who helps the police solve usually religiously or occult related crime and murder. And the ideas for these books, these novels, there's four of them now, they tend to come from just concepts. They don't come from cases as such. Mm. So, for example, the first book came from the concept of baptism and a religious idea that if people believe that baptism as a ritual will somehow kind of cleanse your sin and make you fit for heaven, well, I was just sitting thinking, well, so why don't we just baptize people and then kill them straight after?
Yes.
Because otherwise the risk is, you know, they're going to like live their lives and potentially fall away again or like lose doubt and or commit some sort of sin the next day, and then they disqualify themselves for heaven. So I was thinking, surely the most the kindest thing you can do for a person is to baptize them and then kill them immediately afterwards, and then they get fast tracked to heaven, straight into paradise for the rest of their life because they're perfect. Of course, I don't believe that that's what baptism does. I think baptism is more it's a symbol, rather than an actual kind of physical washing of sin type thing.
Mm.
But having said that, like, it becomes that it's that sort of idea that becomes then therefore the motivation of the murderer in that book, who is going around and baptizing people and killing them straight after because he believes he's the, you know, the last true evangelistic person of the world because he's actually saving people for heaven. And so it's thoughts like that. Or in the third book, Severed, I was just thinking, you know, what would happen if there was a religious cult who believed that the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, were not one, but actually they were rivals, and that God the Father, you know, sent Jesus the Son, and people started to really love him more than God the Father. And so that God the Father murdered him on a cross.
Mm.
And that there's some sort of like Greek God style rivalry between the Christian Trinity. And it's these sorts of like weird ideas that I have when I'm out, like, you know, walking around or eating ice cream. I'm like, oh, never thought of that. those are the things that that make me kind of that create the story, and so the concept comes, and then I think, oh, that could make for an interesting story. The fourth book about possession is a little bit more straightforward in that I was reading a lot about demonic possession, and I just thought, like, it would be interesting to have a book that's about the first televised mass exorcism, because I was watching some like mass exorcisms in Italy of people who, you know, it wouldn't just be one person, but it might be like 20, 30 or something in a church getting exorcised all at the same time. And the second book is based on a real case in the sense of like my own paranormal experience that I had when I was a kid, well, teenager. But on the whole, it's concepts that make me think of stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of your many strengths, Peter, is you're a wonderful orator as well. I mean, your presentation at Strange Days was marvellous. It was one of the highlights of a wonderful weekend for me.
Oh, thank you. It's kind of you. As was yours.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, yours is great.
Thank you. It was the thing that I've always found one of your strengths is that it's articulate, it's intelligent, but it's also humorous without being too preachy. And I don't mean that as a backhanded compliment or a bit of a sly play on words, Peter. It is what it is. There is a joy to your writing and your work that you do. As I say, I mean, The Frighteners is a joyous exploration of strangeness, really. It's a Fortean road trip with a difference.
Yeah.
But it's overall, there is a real needle of happiness and positivity throughout
like
it, as
that.
You say.
Yeah.
And I think for people like ourselves who wouldn't be, you know, on face value, Peter would look at those and perhaps think we weren't part of that margin of darkness, that we love these kind of things. Because once again, it's how you present yourself. It's what you do. It's how you look. We don't wear the uniform of the people that like those things often.
Yeah, that's true, actually, because I don't necessarily like dress in a way that people think that I'm like super into horror or whatever. So when I'll suddenly just sort of mention things that I'm into, people are, oh right, you like that sort of stuff. So it's not as immediately obvious. But I'm glad you mentioned the happiness thing, because the Daily Mail reviewed The Frighteners and described it as a paradoxically jolly jaunt through our love of horror. And I thought, yeah, that's, you know, I'm not really the biggest Daily Mail reader, but I was like, yeah, I'll take that one, because that is right. It's there is a sort of jolliness and a happiness, because I am a fundamentally positive person. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I've had experiences in my life that have made me very sad and challenged and anxious, and you know, I'm still a human being, but I tend to err on the side of yeah, let's do this. You know, like positivity, and that's just always been my nature. And to have a laugh, and I do think having a laugh is really important. I mean, I'm not going to write a book on the importance of humor, because it's not my area. But I could equally write another book on not just how much morbid culture is needed, but how morbid humor is needed, and how we need to be able to laugh through even the worst of experiences. And the idea that, you know, society would try to stop us having a laugh, and particularly at difficult times, is dangerous, I think. Because sometimes I get, you know, if someone's, you know, for guys, like, just been hit by a truck and they're lying in the middle of the road, you know, it's not very appropriate to sort of stand there and like point at them, go like, ha ha ha. So I'm not, there has to be some sort of time differential here. But no, on the whole, I think we just, in the same ways we need morbid culture to cope with life, we need humor to cope with morbid things. And the thought that we're not allowed to laugh about anything is, taking away one of our greatest sort of tools to survive psychologically.
Absolutely. And I think it's important, especially in this particular field, Peter, people can take themselves far too seriously, I think, and often don't... You've got to be able to laugh at yourself, because often a lot of the things that we're interested in, or the cases that we look at, are absurd, they're strange, they're peculiar. And I think there are little moments in certain cases that really make me chuckle at times. The Pontefract case, which may just be when it happened, regardless of what the current owner may suggest in regards to visiting it, because obviously you can stay there at East Drive. If you've got that much money kicking about. But there's parts of that case that really make me laugh, even though they're quite frightening, like the bit with the dancing gloves on the door go around it.
Yeah.
And you just like, I mean, it's weird, and it's quite, you know, gives you a chill, but it's also absurd. The woman who says, oh, you haven't got a ghost, when she's telling the mum, no, there's nothing going on here, you've just got overactive teenagers, and a jug of milk gets poured over her head, as if to say, well, it's not the teenagers now, is it, my dear?
Yes. Yeah.
And so sometimes you've got to laugh. I mean, the video you did a few months ago about the Doddleston case, one of the things that made me chuckle about that was you trying to recreate the stacks of the bottles and things, but also trying to explain that, well, this is a modern bottle, and it's not like what you could have had in the 1980s, but the whole sort of, like, you were trying to do Jenga with domestic items, Peter. It was hilarious, because when you look at it, people say, oh, well, that's easy to do. But then when you actually show the practicality of it, it's not as easy to dismiss, because gravity, for a start...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, I find some things like really, really funny. And sometimes with my episodes, like I did an episode recently called The Devil Next Door about a guy who moved into a house where next door there was a couple of, an elderly couple who were essentially like claiming themselves as like black witches and came around to ask if he was a friend of Satan. And it all linked in with this really quite messed up haunting in his house. And it was an amazing, like, interesting, quirky, very English case, and I loved it, and it was spooky. But at the end of it, it was all about like how, you know, the friendly person next door might actually be, you know, an insidious force in your life. And if you have a haunting in your house, who's to say the person that's living next to you is somehow creating this haunting through this malevolent plan to get your house or something? So it was an interesting idea. But at the very end of that episode, I read the poem out from Angela Carter's A Company of Wolves that talks about, you know, sweetest tongue hath sharpest tooth, and
yes,
how you know it's you can't always trust people. But at the very end, as the camera was on, I just had this like urge to do this really kind of slow and manic smile, like there was something really wrong with me, and I was just staring at the camera looking like I'd gone completely insane. And then I stopped it, and then I watched it back, and I was like killing myself laughing at this because it was so over the top and it was so stupid but also spooky. And I'm like, I should cut this. And then I just decided to ask her. It made me laugh, it's funny, I'm gonna keep it in. And and it was amazing how some people did say it was funny, but like people, I had so many comments of saying that bit, that ending just totally freaked me out, it was really scary. And so it's funny how like the things you can find hilarious yourself, maybe it's because you're doing them yourself and you know the intention behind it, but yeah, people found that scary. I just thought it was proper funny. And I think humor within it is you're right, it is a naturally humorous kind of endeavor in some ways, let me put it this way, the paranormal field creates like humorous potential and scenarios. A good example is my sister is from the Northeast, and she went on a ghost hunt once in like I can't remember what it was, Durham Cathedral Castle or Lumley Castle, I don't know where it was. But anyway, she's out in this ghost hunt with a ghost, with a paranormal guide, you know, and they all go into this room and there's a bunch of them and they turn all the lights off and they're waiting, and then suddenly like the leader says like, wait, can you hear it? Can somebody hear that weird crackling sound? And they were really genuinely shocked to find that there was paranormal activity going on. And then my sister's voice just comes out of the darkness saying, oh, sorry, that was me. I was just opening me toffee crisp. and it's like, you know what I mean? It's like when you think about like how intense the paranormal world is mixed with all of this like quirky everyday stuff, it is a natural place to be both mesmerized but also humorized, if that's a word. That's why it's so cool, you know, it's so cool to be part of it.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all of that you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Mm, absolutely. I remember going on a ghost hunt and the person I was with had some rather bad wind, Peter, shall we say.
Oh, dear.
And on the tour, we were in a particular location and somebody said, can you smell it? What is that? Yeah. And my friend just looked at me and just went,
yeah.
And I went, yeah, we can.
Yeah.
What could that be?
I'm thinking
it's probably chicken tikka, I think. It's
funny you should mention that because I sometimes a guest on the Uncanny, the BBC
yes.
thing. And I did one episode of that once where it was something like the Beast of Langeais or something.
Mm.
And it was two blokes who were hitchhiking, I think, and they went to this castle in France and they were under a bridge and this, almost like a kind of, they had this encounter with what they felt was some sort of demonic goat. And it wasn't, it was a really cool story, but it wasn't really the strongest of paranormal experiences. So me being on the side of the believers, it was a bit harder to defend it because I could also think of potential reasons why it wasn't actually paranormal. And one of those was, one of the big evidences was, you know, when the goat came over, we heard it clip-clopping above us. And then there was this horrendous stench that came with it, like nothing I've heard before. The very aroma of hell itself. And I just remember starting to like giggling at this and going like, man, maybe like his friend just like let one rip. That was so a demonic level of aroma that he was so ashamed that for the rest of his life, he just stuck with this story of like, oh, like we encountered a demon. That's the only explanation of how bad that fart was. And he's never like given that up. But of course, I can't say that because I'm trying to like represent the belief. Actually, to be honest, I did see it when in the recording. I think I did say the fart idea, but I don't know if that made the episode. I don't know.
It's true, though. It's true. I mean, I remember exploring a sort of tower in a hotel that was supposed to be haunted. I was chugging on my vape, and somebody behind me went, "Can you see that? Can you see it?" And it was just smoke.
Oh.
Is somebody vaping? And I'm thinking, if you can't hear me vaping. And I'm like 3 foot away from you. I think there's more problems than ectoplasm wandering around this room, to be honest. But it just showed how nice I went, no, it was me. It was me. But I know if I hadn't, we could have all gone along. Oh, my God, did you see it trying to materialise then? And it's sometimes that's one of those things I think when we're on about having an open mind, Peter, is that sometimes people can leap to the most fanciful explanation straight away, and you're like you
say, straight away, yeah.
You know, we're being silly, but maybe he was so frightened by the clip-clopping noises. And ghosts are quite, they're ghosts. Goats are quite erratic animals anyway at the best of time, aren't they?
Especially goat ghosts.
Goat, oh, they're the worst, especially if they're called Peter.
Yeah.
as in the film, not your namesake, obviously.
Yeah.
And so maybe it would have, the fear would have made his bowels move a little bit and it just escaped.
Oh, why is he saying he literally crapped himself? Maybe it's even worse. Yeah, quite possibly. Have you seen that TikTok of the woman who's on a call with a medium and her daughter's in the background, but like the white balance of the video is so high that she's like really kind of glowing. And then the medium's like, "Is that a ghost behind you? Is that a ghost?" He's like, "No, it's my daughter."
It's Bethany.
Yeah, that's right. She looks like she's in spirit. She's literally, well, that's not very nice. Like, so yeah, all that's, you're right. But just as believers can jump to conclusions, like I said earlier, like skeptics can quickly like pull out the, oh, infrasound. That's what explains that. And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But I do think that for a lot of people, myself included, the middle ground is a very respectable place to be.
Mm.
And you will naturally lean more towards one or the other. And I definitely, if put a gun to my head and made me choose, I would definitely be on the believer's camp. And that just that grows and grows like the older I get. I used to be very believer. And then for about 10 years ago or something, I was like becoming a little bit more cynical for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was, I'm not really sure. But that was about everything, you know, that was just going through that sort of deconstruction of all your beliefs. But then going through that, I come back with a stronger sense. And the paranormal, I think, is a very strong tool to rebuild belief if you're actually open to give the witnesses the benefit of the doubt, which is what I tried to do with Into the Fog. Mm. Nice little bookend there with what I started with. That's how you know a total pro.
I am in awe at your presence, sir.
Thank you.
Of course
I'm joking as well there too.
I suppose it is. Like we say, it's the same. I mean, sometimes the explanations that get put forward that are based in reality are often as tenuous as, oh, well, it's obviously a demonic goat that's come to kill us for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you stumble across them, or they'll focus on a particular aspect, which can be explained, but that doesn't explain everything else. And I dislike that kind of piecemeal solutions to things, because too often people say, right, well, I've explained that and I therefore do not need to deal with anything else. Enfield's a great example of that, because the kids got caught cheating a couple of times. One of my favourites is Sandra Mansi, who famously took a picture of the legendary lake monster Champ from Lake Champlain, which was explained away as a tree root exploding from the lake floor at the precise moment that she had her camera out.
Yeah.
Which completely ignores what Sandra said prior to that, that she saw this creature raise its head, turn it to look at her, growled, and she started taking pictures, and then it dove beneath the surface.
Yeah.
So what the explanation is focuses on what the picture is and absolutely nothing else that she deals with. Now, I'm not saying she took the picture of a creature. Mm-hmm. What I am saying is I've yet to see anything on video that shows a tree root exploding to the lake surface in such a manner. In general, I've seen all kinds of weird natural formation. I mean, one of the, you know, as we're talking about being weirdos, I love documentaries about extreme weather, Peter.
Oh, yeah.
So things like tornadoes and chasing, hurricanes and things like that, because it just shows you the insignificance that we really are when nature decides to pull its sleeves up and show us who's in charge.
Yeah.
And I've seen incredible things there, from sinkholes swallowing a whole lake to massive mountain slides to all sorts. I have yet to see a tree exploding from the bottom of a lake.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I haven't. And again, I theoretically can see why it could possibly happen, I suppose. But it does. Yeah, it's not like it's not the slam dunk that people think it is. And I think that can happen. And I see this quite a lot, where people will say, the classic slam dunk with a haunted house case, for example, is, well, they wrote a book about it, and there you go. That's all you need to know. It was all about money because they wrote a book about it. And it's like that again. That's not the slam dunk that they think it is, because for some of these people, and you know, before we started recording, we talked about a recent episode I did about a woman called Doretta Johnson and her family.
Yes.
Who had a really fascinating and neglected, I think, haunting in Indiana in the 80s, and she wrote a book, The People in the Attic, about that. But in many ways, that was born out of how devastating this haunting was on their finances, because, you know, they were losing money on the house, they couldn't get a loan, they couldn't get they were struggling because of the publicity of this haunting. It did not make them rich. It was really quite the opposite. And so, yes, she wanted to get her story out there, but it wasn't like some sort of get rich quick scheme. And people have this feeling like even with things like Amityville or whatever, they'll think, well, I mean, that because that became a cultural juggernaut, that's what they all had in mind at the beginning. And I think particularly with Amityville, there's plenty of, lies involved in that and made up things. You know, I'm quite open to that, but I'm of the maybe the slightly less popular belief these days that there was something to the haunting at the beginning. I don't know exactly what, but I think there was something. I did a pretty deep dive into that in an episode recently in August, which tried to look at it in a completely in a way that did not focus on the book or on the films, but purely on the, you know, the witness statements. And to me, you know, there could well be something to it. But then it became this cultural juggernaut that just got totally out of hand. And then, yes, lies started to come into that. But that doesn't mean the initial thing was totally off. But again, someone can just come along, whether it's a big case like Amityville or not, and just say, well, they wrote a book about it, or a film was made about it. So that proves that it's not true. Just the same way as somebody might watch a video of me sharing my paranormal experience and say, oh, well, you just made this up to get some views. You're not getting it here. Like that's not, I mean, yeah, I want to get views. I mean, that's the point, but it's people, like, do you really think like all of these people are just trying to get famous? Some of them might be, but quite a lot of the people you speak to, like, I get hundreds of emails now from around the world of people who have experiences, and they're saying things like, I don't want you to tell people about this, but I am we're so traumatized by what's happening or what has happened. I cannot make sense of it. I have to get it out, and I have to share it with somebody who I think is not going to mock me for it. And that sharing, like, anyone who has a trauma, like, people go through traumas all the time, and then they share their story, and we say there is something powerful in the sharing. Talk about it, talk to someone about it, or talk to even many people about it, and it can help to get it off your chest. But when it comes to the paranormal, we think, well, if you talk about it, it's proof that you made it up. And I just think that's lazy thinking.
Yeah. And if it was that easy, Peter, we'd all be doing it and we'd all be rich.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's not that simple. It's not a once again, it's not a one size fits all, because,
yeah,
as you say, Amityville is often a prime example of the stick used to beat people who say they live in a haunted house. And I think it's a good example of people's cutoff point, I think, for cases like that is from a book or from interviews after they've left or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you've got to use the primary sources. The Smurl haunting is another prime example that the reality that was going on at the time bears very little resemblance to the book and the film and and the retelling over and over and over.
Yes.
But if you look at the original newspaper reports, it very quickly starts to contradict itself, and you start to think, if I was this traumatized, I would know the minute something had happened in my particular home, and whatever, I would remember that. I wouldn't then start thinking, oh, was it 3 months? Was it 18 months? Because they're not like, was it last week? Was it this week? You're talking big times.
That might be you. You might have a brain that's fortunate enough to kind of like remember where things happen. But I mean, I've had things in my life that have been very like intense and traumatic, but I'm not capable, unless I've written it down at the time, I'm not capable of pinning it down to an exact moment sometimes. And also sometimes things will happen that I dismiss because I don't want to have to think about them. You know, like we moved into I've been in this house for quite a while now, but we moved into a new build house quite a few years ago. This is the house I'm in. I wasn't in the house that long when I was sitting downstairs working. The house was empty. And then I heard this like almighty crash coming from upstairs. And I'm talking about like a devastating feeling of, oh crap, like the, you know, something has collapsed.
Yeah.
Like this is our new house. It's like you're rushing up the stairs to see what this massive crash is, and just finding absolutely nothing and looking everywhere. And it wasn't, you know, I was listening to music downstairs. It wasn't to do with that. There wasn't some Alexa speaker or something like dishing out some crazy random sound effects. Yes. And like I could feel it. Like you could feel this crashing in the house. Anyway, so it's the sort of thing that like if I was in another person's house that was claimed to be haunted, I'd be like, I'm going to remember that. And I'm going to write down what happened. That to me is evidence that something spooky was going on there. But when it was in my own house, I was like, I cannot explain that, but it's my house and I don't want to have to think about it. And so I just moved on. And so I cannot remember I can picture where I was. I know it was daytime and I remember it vividly, but I've got no clue exactly when it happened. And because my brain was shutting off from the thought of it being in the house where my family is, because that's too scary. If it's in a haunted place, somebody, if it's in your house, Paul, I'm like, come on.
Yes.
You've got a demon, Paul. You know, like, because I've got the distance. But if it's in my own house, you know, it becomes less safe to label it as paranormal. And so I label it as trivial and it drifts away from my mind. And so these sorts of things can happen with paranormal cases. And I'd be interested to know, you know, how many people do go through frightening, inexplicable experiences, but they forget them. Not because they weren't dramatic, but just because they don't want to remember them.
Mm. Well, sometimes the brain protects us, whether we realize it or not, Peter, in all kinds of trauma. And it is strange, things like that. I mean, if you come around here, the only thing you'll get is annoyed because whatever's here, it's very sporadic, doesn't happen a lot. It's a chain smoking thing. So I don't know what it is. As an ex-smoker, because we get balls of cigarette smoke appear and you can walk in and out of them.
Damn.
But nobody smokes cigarettes here. Neighbours don't smoke cigarettes. Wow. And
In a ball. It's in a ball.
It's like a ball. I mean, you can't see it, but you know it's got shape and form because you can walk in and out of it.
Does it feel cold or anything when you go through it?
No, it's just an overpowering sense of smell of cigarettes. Like, powerful. It once woke me up at 3 a.m. So it was above my head. And the smell woke me up, made my eyes sore.
Wow.
It irritated me. And literally within 3 or 4 seconds, it was gone. But it's happened in different rooms in the house. So it's a bit odd. I mean, I don't know. It's probably not happened for about 4 months. But it happens and it's instantaneous. As soon as you notice it, it's a smell that can't be explained. Because like I say, nobody's smoking. Why would somebody smoking outside mean that I can smell it in the kitchen, which is nowhere near? So,
Craig, just when you think you can like avoid passive smoking and then it ends up like in your house.
Chasing me.
Yeah, like a ghost, like just blowing it in your face.
Must like me.
This is my place. Actually, yeah, maybe it's like some sort of femme fatale or an old like Dick Tracy film. Yeah. I like to watch you sleep. You know. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Mm. So, Peter, before I let you go, what's next for you and Into the Fog? I know you've got a signing coming up soon as well. So obviously you're still going out there and meeting and shaking hands with the general
public. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, the little signing I've got coming up is, it's cool. It's in the Metro Centre in Gateshead, which is like where I grew up around there. Like as in I grew up in a place called Chesley Street. So it's really kind of wild going back to these shops that I used to go to as a kid. And particularly HMV. I don't know if it's the same HMV shop as... when I was a kid, but like I remember buying like the album to Stephen King's Christine, the vinyl, and buying Fright Night and Silver Bullet and all these different like albums from there. So it's kind of cool to be there, you know, signing my own stuff and people coming in to buy that. But no, as for what else I'm doing, my focus really is at the moment, will be for the foreseeable future, Into the Fog, because it's become quite a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And I really want to just try and work out how I can keep the momentum up with that, but also to see if there's ways of, you know, expanding things. And but at the moment, it's basically like making a documentary every couple of weeks. And it's pretty thrilling to have the opportunity to do that and to be able to focus, you know, my whole time on it, really. I still do one day a week doing some chaplaincy work and in a retirement place. And I don't need to do that, but it's kind of good to be able to get out the house and like actually interact with physical human beings.
Conversations.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe at some point I'll need to step back from that so I can fully concentrate on all of this stuff. But at the moment, that's the balance and it seems to be working out pretty well.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to it and all power to you because Into the Fog has become a mainstay of my entertainment. I've been fortunate enough to meet you, Peter. You're a smashing fella from top to bottom.
Aren't you?
Intelligent, articulate, and damn good fun. And I wish you the continued success. Where can everybody find your books, follow your channel, and keep up to date with everything in the world of Peter Laws?
Well, firstly, thank you for mentioning my bottom. That doesn't get mentioned enough, I think.
Along with your wonderful jumpers.
Yeah, that's right. But secondly, people like just Google the word Peter Laws, two separate words, of course, you'll find me. But if you go to peterlaws.co.uk, you can find all of my books and things. But really, like if you want to find where I most hang out, I either go to YouTube, right? Peter Laws or Into the Fog with Peter Laws. Or if you want to get like extra stuff from me and get more kind of connected, I do have a Patreon and it's called patreon.com/Peter Laws.
Fabulous. I'll put links to everything in the show notes. I wish you the very best, my friend.
And you.
I hope our paths cross again because we had such a good time last time.
Yeah, and, it was a good laugh.
Yes, we both needed to drink more water on the Friday.
Tell me about it, man.
And that's what happens when middle-aged men get let loose on their
own. That's right. Yeah, next time, let's remind ourselves, like, it's water time, Paul. Just one off.
Get a little badge saying, am I hydrated?
Yeah, and then I'm going to get one of those caps, you know, those caps that have, like, the straws. Like one beer on one side, water up on the other. That should work.
Well, we'll share them when we do that then, Mike.
Yeah, let's do that.
Thank you again, Peter. It's been a pleasure as always.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.